This is Brian Tracy again. We have a wonderful hour planned for you. We're going to talk about how to change your thinking and change your life. And it's interesting. I've been speaking and doing interviews on this subject all over the country the last few days. And so we're really warmed up. One of the things that I want you to think about right from the very beginning is to imagine you have a construction site, beautiful piece of land, and you can build anything you want on this piece of land, but you have to clear the land first, because that's what we're going to talk about. And we're going to talk about you being able to build a beautiful home, a beautiful life, a beautiful future, but you have to clear away a lot of things. Or if you can imagine another picture, imagine a canvas that you can paint on. It's completely clean, but you can paint the picture of your life. My friend Dinesh D'Souza wrote a book recently called What's So Great About America, and in that he uses a little analogy. What he says is that America is like Hollywood. You can write the script of your own life, and if you're not happy with the script, you can tear it up and you can write it again. And this is one of the most wonderful things about our lives, is that today, no matter what part of your life you dislike, you can tear that part up and write it again. You know, when they make a movie, very often they'll make the movie and they'll make several different scenes and they'll make several different cuts and they'll do it again. And sometimes they'll play the movie and the reviewers will say, this is a terrible movie. And they'll go back and they'll reshoot critical parts. They'll change the ending around. They'll do all kinds of things. Well, you can do the same thing. Your movie is in production right now. It's going on every minute, every hour. But any given time, you can say, you know, I don't like this scene. I think I'll change this scene. I'll cut it and clip the scene. So let's begin with regard to change your thinking and change your life. Let's begin with our key principle. And the key principle is this. You become what you think about most of the time. You know that the law of cause and effect is the granddaddy law, the iron law of the universe. It says that everything happens for a reason. And the most powerful factor in your life are your thoughts. They're the things that you think. And the things that you think determine and control everything that happens to you, and so you become what you think about most of the time. So at the University of Pennsylvania, they interviewed several hundred thousand people over a 20-year period and asked them what they thought about most of the time. And they sliced and diced the group and divided them up into percentiles, and they took the top 10% of people. And what they found, which you know, is they found the top 10% of people think about what they want and how to get it most of the time. Now, here's an interesting thought, and sometimes I refer to a dimmer switch. If you have a dimmer switch in your home and you turn it on full bright, it really lights up the room. If you turn it down really low, it's very, very dark. You have a dimmer switch on your brain as well. When your dimmer switch is on full, you are positive, creative, high energy, intelligent, personable, friendly, popular. You're all the best things that you could possibly want to be. When your dimmer switch is down low, your mental dimmer switch, you're angry, you're worried, you're fearful, you're anxious, you're insecure, you lack confidence, and so on. So what this means is that your job is to keep your dimmer switch on full most of the time. And the way you do that is you think about what you want and how to get it most of the time. Think about what you want and how to get it most of the time. If you do that, every single time you think about what you want and you think about a positive action that you can take to get it, surprise, surprise, your dimmer switch goes on full. Now, there's a great law called the law of substitution. And the law of substitution says that you can only think one thought at a time, positive or negative, and you can substitute a positive thought for a negative thought. That means if you find yourself thinking about something you're worried about or that makes you angry or something else, you can immediately switch, like swinging a searchlight. You can switch that searchlight and put it onto something that you like, that makes you happy. And there's nothing that makes you happier than thinking about what you want and how to get it. So that's a basic premise. So I want to start off with this thought. And the thought is, what holds us back more than anything else in life is not external factors. External factors really have no impact on you. In the Course of Miracles, it says that you give meaning to all you see. And it goes on to explain that nothing that you see has any meaning or significance in and of itself, except from the meaning you give it. There may be a person in your life that makes you happy or sad, but for someone else who doesn't know that person, that has no emotional impact on them at all. And your job is to realize that you give meaning to what you see and that your fears and self-doubts are what hold you back. And overcoming fear and self-doubt is the starting point of great success. You know, there's a famous story of the person who goes down to visit hell, and the devil is showing him around. and shows him all the terrible things that he uses to get people into hell. And he shows him drugs and dope and lives of crime and overeating and poor health and habits of failure and all these things that ruin people's lives on earth and cause them to live in their own little hells. And then he says, now let me show you my pride and joy. This is my favorite of all. And he takes him into a darkened room, like a museum room. And in the room, there's only one case. It's in the middle of the room, surrounded with glass, and it has one light, and the light is shining on a wedge. And he said, this is my greatest treasure. I destroy more lives with this than everything else put together. And the visitor says, well, what on earth is it? It looks like a wedge. He said, yes. He said, this is the wedge of self-doubt. He said, this is the wedge of self-doubt. He said, if I could just get the corner of this wedge into the back of a person's mind, I can drive it in and drive a gap between what they can do and what they think they can do. And if I can get them to doubt themselves, I can get them to live in hell all their lives. Now, it's a really important story because it is self-doubt that holds us back. Is you are extraordinary. You have more talents and more abilities than you could use if you lived 100 lifetimes. According to the very best psychologists, the average person uses not more than about 2% of their mental potential. You have a brain with 20 billion cells. Each of those cells is connected to about 20,000 other cells, which means that the total combinations and permutations of thoughts you can think is the number 1 plus 8 pages of zeros. Basically, you can think more thoughts with your brain than all the molecules in the known universe. You are so smart, it is unbelievable. What you can do compared to what you're doing today is literally beyond belief. I remember for years and years, I wanted to write a book, and I thought about writing a book from the time I was about 18. A friend of mine and I used to talk about writing books. We even went out and bought pipes, and we'd smoke pipes and talk about being authors. And I worked at it, and I thought about writing a book. I never wrote a book until 1989, and I finally only wrote the book then, and with great duress and so on, because I got an advance from a major publisher and a whole lot of other things. Well, that was something like 30 years of thinking about writing a book, but I always doubted that I could do it. And I finally sat down and did it. The book has sold 250,000 copies in English, 500,000 copies. It's in 20 languages. It's been very successful. And then it occurred to me, you know, I could write another book. And it was such a great thought because I doubted myself for so long. And the very idea of writing a second book was so remarkable, so I did. And then I wrote a third book. And now I've written 27 books. And now I write and publish 4 books a year. And I have many friends and colleagues who write a book every 3 to 5 years if they're lucky. I write and publish 4 to 5 books a year. And people say, well, how can you do it? And I say, well, it's not because I'm smart. It's just because I just don't doubt that I can do it. And so the first thing you have to ask is, what are your self-doubts? What doubts do you have that might be holding you back? The turning point for me came many years ago when I discovered the self-concept. Now, the self-concept is defined many ways. It's basically your bundle of beliefs about yourself. Now, everybody has beliefs about themselves that determine how they walk, talk, think, act, and see the world. We say, you don't believe what you see what you believe. And my friend Wayne Dyer says, you will see it when you believe it. And so what we know is that your beliefs form a screen that you look through and you see the world distorted through your own beliefs. So if you have really positive beliefs, really upbeat beliefs, if you believe that you're capable of doing great things, well, then that's the way you'll see the world. That's the way you'll look at opportunities and possibilities. That's even how you'll look at setbacks and obstacles. You'll say, ah, well, this is all part of a great plan. So you will not allow things to hold you back. And so your self-concept is made up of your bundle of beliefs. If you can imagine a bundle of twigs all tied together, you have a bundle of beliefs in your subconscious mind, and your self-concept determines your level of performance and effectiveness. It determines what you do and how well you do it. And if you look at the self-concept, what we have found is your self-concept is made up of 3 parts, each of which you can affect, and each of which affects each other. The first part of your self-concept is your self-ideal. Now, your self-ideal is the person that you would ideally like to be. It is the perfect person. If you could wave a magic wand and just be an outstanding human being, how would you describe yourself in terms of health, qualities, character, personality, skills, abilities, income, money, lifestyle? Well, this is called your ideal. And what we know in psychology is that you are programmed at a deep level to be continually striving, reaching towards your ideal. reaching toward becoming the very best person you could possibly be, living the very best life you could possibly live. And here's what we found. People with very clear self-ideals tend to evolve far more rapidly toward making them real than people who don't. You'll find that the worst of all is when you have negative ideals, like some people in the inner cities, their ideals are people who are criminals and dishonest, and so therefore they think, well, that's what I want to be, and so they strive toward becoming something negative. So your selection of role models, ideals, the people that you admire, the people who have qualities that you look up to, have an enormous impact on your life. In one of the studies that was done, they found that men and women who become great as adults tended to read a lot of biographies and stories about other successful men and women when they were children. And as a result, they were unconsciously programming themselves to grow up and be like the people that they admired when they were young. One of the greatest influences in your life is your parents. If your parents are really nice people, positive, honest, hardworking, truthful, then that'll become an ideal for you, and you'll strive to be like that throughout your life. So that's the first part of your self-concept. And the closer you are to your ideal, the higher and stronger and better is your self-concept. Now, the second part of your self-concept is your self-image. And your self-image is the way you perform on the outside. You always perform on the outside determined by the picture you have on the inside. As they say, the person you see is the person you will be. So you have a self-image of the way you get along with other people. You have a self-image of how well you sell. You have a self-image of how good you look, how healthy you are. You even have a self-image of how much you weigh. One of the things we found in psychology is that the only way you can lose weight permanently is to think thin. The only way you can become wealthy permanently is to think like a wealthy person. Is you've got to develop the mindset. You've got to see yourself as rich and successful. You've got to see yourself as healthy and fit. You have to see yourself as popular and attractive to other people. Well, here's what we learn. We learn that every time that you do something that is consistent with your self-ideal, you like yourself more. Every single time your self-image, the way you perform today, the way you see yourself, and your self-ideal are close together, you feel better and stronger about yourself. However, every time you do something that is less than your ideal, you blow up, you get angry, you do something that you really feel crummy about, it lowers your self-esteem. And that brings us to the third part of your self-concept, which is how much you like yourself, your self-esteem. And what we found is the key to your performance is the energy core. And this is like the rocket engine in your personality, your self-esteem, how much you like yourself. And we encourage people to say over and over again, I like myself. I like myself. I like myself. Every single time you say, I like myself, your self-image improves. Every single time you say, I like myself, you perform better at whatever you're doing. As you perform better, you move closer to your self-ideal. Your self-confidence goes up. Your self-respect goes up. Your personal pride increases. And each time you do these things, you contribute toward developing a habit of being better and better. So whenever you find a person who is really doing well, is they have a positive self-concept. They have great clarity about the direction they're going in life. They see themselves in the most positive terms, and they really like and respect themselves as valuable and important people. So one of the things you have to do for the rest of your life is ask yourself, is what are your basic premises about your own personality? Do you consider yourself to be a valuable and worthwhile person? Do you consider yourself to be a winner? Do you consider yourself to be a champion? And no matter what experiences you have, keep reminding yourself that you are an outstanding person, that you have within you incredible qualities, that you are on your way to doing remarkable things with your life. And the wonderful thing is your belief creates the actual fact. You can actually sit down at the keyboard of your mental program and you can reprogram yourself by feeding in different words, pictures, ideas, and images of the very best person you could possibly be. And over time, your outer world will become like your inner world. Over time, the way that you behave on the outside will be like a mirror, be like a projection of the way you behave on the inside. Now, how do you change your life? Well, we know that the greatest obstacle to changing our lives are negative emotions. Negative emotions, which I began studying 25 years ago, are the greatest enemies to human potential. And the worst of all your negative emotions are your fears of failure or loss and your fears of rejection or criticism. Now, your fears of failure begin in early childhood when your parents tell you, don't, get away from there, stop doing that, don't touch that, you're too small, that's too dangerous. when you're a child, an infant, you have no idea that they're saying this in order to protect you or for your safety, but you internalize a message that is, I'm too small, I'm inadequate, I'm incompetent, I can't, I can't, I can't. And as an adult, what you do is you walk around thinking, I can't. And the fears of failure are manifested in this feeling. Whenever you get an opportunity or a possibility or a big challenge, your first thought is, oh, I can't do that. I can't afford that, or we can't afford that, or I'd never be good at that. And what we do is we begin to sell ourselves short and settle for less than we're truly capable of. So the starting point of overcoming the fear of failure is to begin saying to yourself, I can do it. I can do it. I can do anything I put my mind to. I can do it. And every single time you think of something that makes you a little bit nervous, you say, wait a minute, I can do that. If other people could do that, if thousands of other people can do that, I can do that. I can fly a plane. I can jump out of a parachute. I can learn to touch type. I can become a millionaire. I can start my own business, run for office. I can do it. If lots of other people have done it, and those people aren't any better or smarter than me, then I can do it as well. So from now on, the way you cancel out or override the fears of failure that hold most people back is whenever you think of something you want to do, just say, hey, I can do that. I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. And if you really want to have a positive influence in the people around you, keep telling your children, keep telling your spouse, keep telling your friends, you can do it. You can do that. You'd be good at that. Constantly encourage people and build them up and encourage them to feel that they can do it as well. Now, the second major fear is the fear of rejection or criticism. One psychologist said to me recently, he said, all problems in adult life come from love withheld. Children need love like roses need rain. So when we're growing up, we need the love of our parents like we need oxygen to the brain. And any threat to the interruption of that love causes us to feel really nervous and tense. So if parents say, you know, you better or else, or you're going to get it, or they get angry with us, or they express their disapproval to us, or worst of all, they use destructive criticism on us, it scares us at an unconscious level, and we immediately conform our behavior to do what it is they want us to do or what it is we feel they want us to do. As we grow older, this concern about loss of love turns into the fear of rejection and criticism from our peers, from our siblings, from our friends at school, and eventually from our bosses, and when we get into the world of work, from everybody around us. So one of the greatest challenges we have is we feel, I have to. I have to do what other people want me to do. I have to do what pleases them. I have to do what will earn their approval. There are many adults, by the way, who are paralyzed because they cannot make a decision. They can't do anything unless they can be sure that they're going to get the approval of other people. If you become hypersensitive to the approval of others, it can reach the point where you're paralyzed thinking of losing the approval of people you don't even know or care about. You want to be a professional speaker or you want to be a salesperson, you're afraid to go out there and promote yourself to people who you don't even know for fear that those people who you've never met before might not approve of your calling on them or speaking to them. It actually becomes completely irrational. And the more you think about your fears, like throwing logs on a fire, the more your fears grow. So the way you overcome the fear of rejection, the fear of criticism, is first of all, realize that nobody else's opinion of you is of any value anyway. Is you can take it or leave it. There's a definition by William Glasser, the psychologist, of a fully functioning person. This is the person who is totally together, totally positive, totally confident. And one characteristic they have is that they take very little concern about the opinions of others. The more you allow other people's opinions to influence you, the more concerned you'll be about it, the less confidence you'll have in yourself, and the more you'll hold yourself back from realizing your potential. So what you do is you say, I don't have to. I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. I don't have to do it if I don't feel like it. I do it because I choose to do it. Now, the worst of all is when we grow up, and we all have this, is the feelings of I have to, the fear of rejection, but I can't, the fear of failure. So we walk around in life saying, you know, I have to, but I can't. I can't, but I have to. And so we're caught between the twin fears. And the way that we overcome them both is we keep saying, I can do anything I put my mind to, and I don't have to do anything that I don't want to. And I can do it. I can do it. And then you begin thinking about what you want and how to get it, and you get busy doing that. So you change your thinking by realizing that you're extraordinary and that it's your self-concept that either holds you back or lets you go. And then you change your life by reprogramming yourself and getting rid of the negative emotions of failure and rejection. Now, there's one other set of negative emotions, and we call this the negative emotion tree, and these are all the negative emotions of jealousy, anger, frustration, envy, resentment, covetousness, and so on. And what we find that all of these negative emotions which hold us back have one root, which we call the trunk of the negative emotions tree, and that is the tendency to blame other people. But we have found that in order for you to change your thinking and change your life, to become an extraordinary person, to conquer a world and achieve goals you've never achieved before, is you've got to stop blaming other people and making excuses for the things in your life that you're not happy about. When we talk about this for most people, not to you because you're exceptional if you're on this call, when we talk about this to most people, it's a real shock. I get arguments. People fight with me. The only time I've ever had people stand up and stomp out of my seminars is when I talk about the idea that you're going to have to stop blaming other people for the problems in your life. You have to stop blaming your parents. You have to stop blaming your previous spouse or your bad relationships or your lousy marriage. You have to stop blaming people in business who have taken advantage of you, or employers who fired you, or partners who've robbed you. You've got to stop blaming other people for the problems of your life. There's a wonderful observation that there are no failures in life, there's only feedback. And that's a really interesting thought. There are no failures, there's only feedback. If you try something, it doesn't work. Well, that's feedback. It's feedback about the person. It's feedback about the situation. It's probably feedback that helps you get out of a situation before it becomes far worse. So one of the ways that you release your brakes and unlock your potential is you make a decision right now. You're never going to blame anybody else for anything. If you're not happy with something, then you get busy and you change it. And if you're not willing to get busy and change it, then accept it and stop blaming other people. Stop making excuses. Whenever you blame other people and make excuses, you give your power away. Now, one of the most important things you have to live a great life is energy, mental, emotional, physical energy. It's the energy of personality. Sometimes it's called the energy of creation. But energy, high energy, comes when you think really positively about yourself and your possibilities. The great tragedy is that you burn up your energy, like revving up your engine when it's sitting in neutral. You burn up your energy with negative emotions. Whenever you get angry or upset, whenever you blame other people or make excuses, whenever you blast off or blow off steam, you use up an enormous amount of energy, at the end of which you can be actually physically and emotionally exhausted. A person who uses an enormous amount of emotional energy during the day burns up all their mental energy and is incapable of even deciding what they want to have for dinner later on in the day. So one of the most important things you do is you keep building up your energy. And the more positive your thoughts, the more positive information that is fed into you, the more positive material you listen to in audio, the more positive books you read, even the more positive people you associate with, the more energy you have. And that energy translates into ideas, inspiration, insight, enthusiasm, motivation, personality, laughter, humor. It puts your dimmer switch on full and makes you the very best person you can possibly be. So start off and say, you know, if I were to say to you, are there foods that you eat that really disagree with you? You say, yes. I say, well, how often do you eat those foods? Well, not at all. Well, are there people or are there thoughts that make you unhappy? Well, yes, there are. Well, how often do you think those thoughts are associated with those people? And suddenly it'll dawn on you, if some person or event, either alive or remembered, makes you feel unhappy, stop associating with that person. Stop thinking those thoughts. Exert the one control you have, which is over your mind, and refuse to think about things that make you unhappy. Remember the law of substitution. What you do is you change the focus of your thinking, and you think about what you want and how to get it, rather than the things that may be holding you back and burning up your energy. Well, this brings us to the next part of changing your thinking, and people ask this all the time, how do I transform my thinking? How do I take charge of my own programming? And the answer is you begin by dreaming big dreams. Now, I'm really a big believer in this. And by dreaming big dreams, what you do is you project forward into the future 5 or 10 years and imagine that you have $1 million or $10 million. Imagine that you have a successful business or an extraordinary life. Imagine that you're incredibly fit or that you have a wonderful family and relationships. What you do is you wave a magic wand over your future and you create a 5-year fantasy and you imagine that 5 years from now your life was perfect in every respect. Then you write it down. You say, if my life was perfect in every respect, I would have these things in it. And write them down. Beautiful home, lovely car, healthy family, happy children, getting good grades, popular, travel, money in the bank, investments, solid portfolio, nice furniture, wonderful lifestyle. In other words, write it down, write it down, write it down. Exactly as if it was guaranteed to you, exactly as if you had no limitations. Now, the interesting thing is that if you do this with your spouse, and sometimes we encourage people in corporations when we do strategic planning to do this with their companies. When you do this with your spouse and you say, honey, if our lives were perfect in every way, well, how would they be different from today? What would we have more of in our lives that we don't have? What would we have less of? What would we get into or get out of if our lives were perfect? And as you begin to crystallize that definition, you crystallize your self-ideal. And there's nothing stronger than a couple who both have the clear picture of the kind of life they want to create for themselves sometime in the future. The couple who really has a clear idea of their long-term future ideals and dreams and goals accomplishes them both at a more rapid rate than you could possibly imagine. So, dream big dreams and look into the future and ask yourself, what one great thing would I dare to dream if I knew I could not fail? Imagine you have all the time and all the money and all the talents and all the ability and all the resources and all the friends and all the contacts and education. You have everything you want in life, and you could be, have, or do anything, big or small, short or long term. What would you really, really like to have in your life? What one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? Now, your answer to this question becomes your major definite purpose. And what we have found is that your life only begins to become great when you establish a major definite purpose, when you absolutely clearly decide that this is what I want more than anything else. You know, sometimes I talk about the fact that most adults have a modified form of attention deficit disorder, ADD, or sometimes attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, is they can't keep on task. Their minds are bouncing all over the place. The attention span of the average adult is about 45 seconds. And somebody comes in, phone rings, they get a different idea, and bang, they're off in a different direction. So I say most adults are very much like a dog in a summer field. You stand back and watch the dog sees a rabbit and takes off after the rabbit. And just as he just about catches the rabbit, another rabbit pops up. And the person takes off after the new rabbit. The dog goes after the new rabbit. And then just as he just about catches the rabbit, another rabbit pops up, and away the dog goes after the rabbit. And if you stand back far enough, you see this dog running back and forth across this field all day long. At the end of the day, the dog's panting and exhausted and tired and just laying there. It hasn't caught any rabbits at all. And that's what happens to most people in life. They go after this rabbit and that rabbit and this possibility and that opportunity and this get-rich-quick scheme and this fast-buck idea. And they're 30 and they're 40 years old, and they're panting away financially, and they don't have a pot to you-know-what in or a window to throw it out of. The average 40-year-old adult in America, having worked 20 years in the most affluent society in history, has a net worth of about $1,010. It's the most amazing thing. And they've always got a good reason why the money is always gone. But the fact of the matter is, at 40 years of age, they're usually deeply in debt. They're dependent upon their paycheck to paycheck. They say that most Americans are two paychecks away from homelessness. If they didn't have their paycheck for 2 months, they would not be able to pay their mortgage or their rent payments because they have no savings. So what we need to do is we need to dream big dreams and make a decision that, by gum, I'm going to become wealthy. I do not want to worry about money. And if all you do is say, I am going to sacrifice, I'm going to save, I'm going to do whatever it takes to become wealthy so I never have to worry about money again, I'm going to tell you a couple of remarkable things will happen. And first of all, as you begin to put money into the bank, begin to save it up, even if it's only a little bit, you begin to imbue that money with a form of psychic energy. This psychic energy is like the throbbing heart of a nuclear reactor, but it starts to attract more money to that account. So when you open up your financial freedom account and you put a little money into it, in no time at all, you'll get another couple of dollars. You'll sell something, you'll get a gift in the mail, you'll get a small bonus. Somebody will buy your lawnmower. And what you do is you take that extra money, and instead of doing what losers do, which is think of, well, how can I spend this money? What you do is you say, I think I'll put this into my financial freedom account. And you add it to the account, which increases the glow, the power, the energy, and starts to attract more money into your life. And by the law of attraction, combined with the law of accumulation, the very act of beginning to save money causes you to start to save more money, to generate more funds. And, surprise, surprise, you'll start to spend more intelligently. You'll start to pay off your debts. You'll do your work a little bit better and a little bit more thoughtfully. You'll get promoted more often and paid more. You'll start to become more valuable. The act of beginning a financial freedom account, even with a small amount, begins an unconscious process of transforming you for the rest of your life. Now, how do we know this is true? Well, there are now 5 million millionaires in America, most of them self-made, and every single one of them did this. Many of them started with nothing, some of them started with a lot, many of them went broke a few times, but at a certain point, they decided to become rich. So, when we talk about changing your thinking and changing your life, let's talk about deciding to become rich, okay? Now, you can do lots of things in life. People say, well, money isn't the only thing in life, and I say, yes, that's true, but it's way up there with oxygen. Because when you decide to become rich and you begin to put money aside and you begin to get ahead of the curve rather than behind it, what will happen is it will transform your personality. You'll become more self-confident. You'll have higher self-esteem. You'll have greater self-respect. The person sitting at the table who's got a pocket full of money or a bank account full of $1,000 bills is a very different person than the other person sitting there hoping that somebody else will pay for his lunch. When you've got money in the bank and money in your pocket, it has an effect on your attitude. It attracts new and better people and opportunities into your life. It changes the way you see your world. You have this greater feeling of personal power by the very act of saving money. So if you don't want the money for yourself, think of putting the money aside because of the transformation it will have on your personality and on your life. And wonderfully enough, the more money you attract, the more money will be attracted to you. So if you want to become wealthy, what you do is you study self-made millionaires. I mean, what the heck? These are people who started with nothing, became wealthy. You might as well become one of them. What the heck, another 5 million people are going to become millionaires in the next few years according to the trend lines. You know, you might as well be one of them. And people say, well, don't you feel guilty making all that money? You say, no, I feel the very best way to help the poor is not to become one of them. So the very best thing you can do is to help the poor is not become a poor person yourself. So what you do is you say, okay, how do financially independent people think? Well, here's how they think. They think in terms of financial independence most of the time. And what they do is in their hierarchy of values, if you can imagine that you have a stack of dinner plates, and these are your values or your goals, and whichever one is on top is your major definite purpose. And everybody has a goal of financial success, financial achievement. However, where it is in your stack of plates is the question. Some people's goal is way down at the bottom. And you can always tell what your goals are by what you think about most of the time. Successful people think about their goals most of the time. If you say, I'd like to be financially independent, but you very seldom think about financial independence, you're actually living in cloud cuckoo land. You're deluding yourself. Financial independence is really not even on your radar screen. It's sort of like on a wish list that's put away for Santa Claus. People who become self-made millionaires put financial independence as about their number two goal in life. Their number one goal in life is always their family, their spouse, and their children. It's always the happiness and well-being of their relationships. Goal number two is financial independence. Now, once you begin to think of financial independence as your major goal, then the only question you ask is how? And the way you achieve financial independence, if we want to look at the millions of self-made millionaires who started with nothing and did it, is you pay yourself first. The very first thing you do is off of every paycheck that you receive, you put some of your money away. Now, George Klassen, in his book, The Richest Man in Babylon, says, save 10% of your income throughout your lifetime. You say, well, that doesn't seem like very much. How do you become wealthy? You become wealthy with what Albert Einstein called the most powerful force in the universe, compound interest. If you save 10% of your income every single year off the top, over the course of 40 or 50 years of working, you're going to be a millionaire. Because your money will grow, if you invest it carefully back in the American economy, your money will grow at 8 to 10% a year. Gradually, it will start to compound and grow on itself. I had a financial advisor once And it was just after I passed the $1 million mark. And he said, well, you're worth more than $1 million today. I said, yes. He said, you know, the first million is very hard. He said, but the second million is almost inevitable. And I just worked so hard for the first million, I really didn't get what he was saying. And he said, what happens is within 10 years, your biggest concern in life will not be earning money, but it will be how you deploy your assets. It will be how you protect them, how you insure them, how you invest them, how you secure them. He said, your biggest concern in life won't be earning the money. The biggest concern in life will be dealing with the amount of money that you have, because at that point, it will start to accumulate on a compound interest basis at about 8% of your net worth. What I found in dealing with professionals in this industry is that people who are wealthy expect or aim at increasing their net worth, that means the amount they have working, by about 8% a year. And sometimes they do it in real estate, and they try to do it in areas where it's not taxable. For instance, if you buy stock and it goes up, you don't have to pay taxes unless you sell it. If you buy real estate and it goes up, you don't have to pay taxes until you sell it. If you build a business and it grows in value, you don't have to pay taxes until you sell the business. So self-made millionaires not only work to take money off the top, but to invest the money in such a way that it continues to grow, especially in areas where taxes are not triggered. They take full advantage of their 401ks so that they don't have to pay taxes on the money that's growing within their pension accounts, and so on. Money that you can grow without paying taxes grows at twice the speed of money that's taxable. By the way, nobody ever made a living or became wealthy working for someone else unless they became a senior executive of a major corporation and earned hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and then used every single possible benefit of the Tax Act to preserve the money. Most people become wealthy as entrepreneurs, as self-employed professionals running their own practices, or as salespeople. Those are the primary sources of self-made millionaires in America, and on top of that, you have executives who get high salaries and stock options. So whatever you're doing today, you're probably in perfect field position to become wealthy. The only question is, will you do it? So you open a financial freedom account, and you begin to put money into it. Now, here's what we have learned psychologically. When you are young, you get an allowance. The allowance you immediately spend on candies and toys. All right? And so your parents say, you know, you should save some of your money. And you even have a piggy bank. But you begin to associate saving with pain, with deprivation, with less candy or fewer toys. So when a person says save your money, you develop an unconscious association in your self-concept that saving money hurts, but spending money makes me happy. And as Sigmund Freud said, we always move away from pain toward pleasure. And if you associate spending money with pleasure, then every single time you get some more money, you'll think of buying something. That's why if you go to a vacation resort, you'll find that they're just jammed with stores full of junk, stuff that you would never buy on your own. You'd never get in the car and go out driving to a store to buy the stuff they sell in vacation resorts. Why? It's because people on vacation have this idea that pleasure is spending money, especially spending money on useless things, what we call gadgets and gadgets and trinkets and trash. So what you need to do is you need to rewire your brain. And then what you do is this, is you begin thinking about how much pleasure you get from saving and growing your account and how much it hurts, how painful it is to spend it all every time you earn it. Every single time you save your money, you look at the amount that you've put in, you look at your growing bank account, and you say, that's neat. Isn't that great? You talk it over with your spouse. You feel happy about it. You visualize and you imagine this money growing. You see yourself financially independent, relaxing by your swimming pool, going for walks, playing golf, being able to take trips, being able to go to nice restaurants and order without looking at the right-hand column to see how hungry you are. And as you begin to associate becoming wealthy and saving money with happiness, you start to save more and more money. And every time you put some money in the bank, you get this little a burst of energy and elation. It makes you happy. So what we have found is that people who become wealthy enjoy saving money and putting it aside. People who are always poor associate saving money with pain and spending money with pleasure. You need to rewire yourself, because until this rewiring takes place, what you are is a bomb waiting to go off. You'll see people who will think that the key to having a lot of money is to be able to go to Las Vegas and buy a motorhome and take a year off. And so they'll work and work and work for a year or two or 3 years. And then they'll say, now I deserve it, and they'll blow it all in an orgy of pleasure. And they go right back to where they were. Whereas people who are successful are those who reverse the wires. Instead, they just love the idea, and they think 5 and 10 and 20 years into the future, and they think about how great it makes them feel to be financially independent. So we've interviewed many, many self-made millionaires, and we say, how do you measure your success? And their answer is always the same. It's how many months I could live at my current standard of living without working. In the book, The Millionaire Next Door, they estimate that a millionaire is somebody who can live a minimum of 10 years without working on their current savings, without selling their house or their car or having to move to an apartment. So from now on, what you think about most of the time is what we call your burn rate, which is how many months you could live at your current burn rate without running out of money. And your goal is to reach a point where your accumulated savings allow you a burn rate that extends beyond your expected lifetime. Which brings to another question, one of the most important of all, is how long do you intend to live? And if you ask people that, they say, oh, I'm going to live to be 80, 90, 100, 110. I say, well, that's a great thought. Let me give you these statistics. The statistics are that according to the insurance companies who can write insurance on this and make a lot of money, you are going to live about two-thirds of the distance between your current age and 100. So if you're 40 years old today, you're going to live to be about 80. That's two-thirds of the distance, 40 years. If you are 60 years old, you're going to live two-thirds of that, which is two-thirds of 40 is 26. You're going to live 26 more years. So let us say that your lifespan, according to the very best statistics today, is about 80 years old. If you make it to 50, you'll make it to 80. If you get through the traumatic time of the 60s when all of your moving parts start to break down. So if you live to be 50, you're going to be 80. Now, that means that whatever age you retire at, you're going to have to put aside enough money so that you can live comfortably for the rest of that time. People say, I want to retire when I'm 60. Okay, well, make sure you have enough money to live comfortably for 20 years because you don't want to have to go back to work when you're 75. And if you think that that's a funny idea, there are lots of people out there working at McDonald's for minimum wage who are senior citizens who have to go back to work when they're 75 because they're all out of money. And Social Security is paying them $800 a month, and it costs them that much for groceries, plus medicine, plus Medicare, plus travel, plus rent, and a whole lot of other things. So therefore, say, okay, I want to live till I'm 90, and you want to retire at 65. Okay, that's 25 years. You want to live till you're 100, and you want to retire at 65. Okay, that's 35 years that you have to live on. Now, what the professionals reckon is that you should be able to live comfortably on 5% of your accumulated net worth. So if you need $100,000 a year to support your current lifestyle, which will cost about 70% of your full working lifestyle, 70-80%, if you need $100,000 a year and you live 20 years, that means you're going to have how much put aside? Well, you're going to have $100,000 a year, 5%, that's 20 times 100,000, you're going to need $2 million to be able to live on 5% per year, $100,000 per year. If it's more than that, then you can work the numbers. But here's an even better question. You decide you want to live to be 80, okay? Well, then the question that I would ask you is, let us say that you have been guaranteed that you're going to live till your 80th birthday and you're going to drop stone dead on your 80th birthday. My question is, how would you like to feel in your 79th year, 360 days out? I mean, how would you like to feel immediately before you die? What kind of level of health would you like to have? How much would you like to weigh? How much energy would you like to have? How would you like to feel? That's a very important question, because if the day before you die, you want to be fit and healthy and alert, and you want to be trim and sleeping well and have no aches and pains, well, how would you like to feel 2 days before you die? And how would you like to be feeling 3 days before you die, and 3 weeks, and 3 months, and so on? And the question that I'm asking is this, is how do you really want to feel? And if you want to feel that way when you're 79, and 360 days or whatever, then you have to start making plans right now to engage in the health habits that will get you there. And the time to start doing it is now. And you have to ask yourself, what should I be doing more of or less of? What should I be starting or stopping now in order to assure that I actually make it to 80 or 90 years? And here's the most remarkable thing. As you begin to think about enjoying superb physical health until you're 90 or 100 years old, you begin to reprogram yourself subconsciously. You change your thinking, and you change your life. You start to eat different foods and fewer of them. You start to take walks and then longer walks. You start to drink more water and be more thoughtful about sugars, fat, salt, and things like that. You start to become a healthier person by the very act of developing a long-time perspective. So, if you interview self-made millionaires, they think about two things. They think, how long can I live on my current savings without working? And what level of health do I want to enjoy all the days of my life? And then what they do is they plan around those twin goals. First, live a long time without any money worries and live really well all that time. I say that your goal should be to live a long life, dance at your grandchildren's weddings, and be killed by a jealous spouse diving out of a window at the age of 93. That should be your goal. It should be that kind of level of fitness. So you decide to become rich. Now, the second thing you can do to become rich, aside from saving more and more of your money, is you can become better and better at what you do. And in terms of time management, we talk about this all the time. The way you manage your time is the way you manage your life. And as Drucker says, you can't manage time, you can only manage yourself. The very best use of your time is to become better at the most important things that you do. In a book that was published recently called The Five Patterns of Extraordinary Careers, the authors who have done years and years of research into people who have extraordinary careers, either working for themselves or someone else, one of the things they find, which is consistent with everything that I've learned in 25 years, is that they understand how value is created in their field. They understand where value comes from in their work, and they're constantly working on themselves to increase their contribution to that value. Fortune magazine did a study some years ago, and they interviewed thousands of companies that were laying people off, and they were looking to find out the common denominator of people who were laid off and people who were kept on. And they found the most remarkable thing. They found that the closer you were to the revenue stream or the cash flow of the company and influencing that cash flow in a positive way, the less likely it was that you'd ever be laid off, the more important you were to the company. But the further away you got from contributing to or influencing sales, revenues, and cash flow, the more expendable you were and the more likely you would be laid off in a downturn. And I've told this to lots of people, and they say, well, geez, you know, I'm in accounting, and what we do is we do the bookkeeping and we keep the records and the shipping and so on. Well, how can I make myself more valuable? I say, well, you can't do it in an area that is so far away from revenue generation that nobody notices you. You've got to change your career, upgrade your skills, move into an area of accounting that has an influence. So one friend of mine decided he would get a master's degree in tax accounting. And it took him about 5 years of night school, weekend school, and time off in order to get a master's degree in tax accounting and tax audit. Now, at that time, however, he got better and better, and he made his studies known to his boss, who worked for a Fortune 1000 corporation, and he was given more and more opportunities to do tax work. By the time it was over, he was the second or third person in the company with a degree, and he was working on the critical issues of tax that had an inordinate influence on cash flow and profitability of the company. Do you think he was ever laid off? No. And do you think if he ever got laid off, he'd be hired again in an instant by some other company that had the same needs? Absolutely. Now, here's an important point. Some people say, geez, you know, you're talking about 5 years. You know, I went to school. I got my education. Let me tell you this. When you go to school, you get your education. And what they do is they teach you some basic subjects. They put you through basic training, if you like. And at the end of your schooling, if you're fortunate enough to stay there, you go through a ceremony. And you may remember what they call the ceremony. They call it a commencement ceremony, okay? Now, many people think that going to school and ending school is going through a termination ceremony. No, it's a commencement. Commencement means to begin, like commence firing, commence living. But it also means to commence living and commence learning. Commence upgrading your skills, because it is generally accepted you really don't know anything as a result of going to school. All you've done is basic training. Only now do you learn anything of value. So what we say is that you've got to, from the moment you start your job, you have to ask yourself, what do I have to learn to become really good at to get into the top 10% in my field? And you have to think about that all the time. Going back to self-made millionaires are always thinking about how they can do the things that they get paid the most for doing better and better. They're constantly upgrading their skills. When I do seminars all over the United States and Canada, all over the world, and I offer my audio and video learning programs at the back. Some people buy $1,000, $2,000 worth of programs. Some people will buy as many as $10,000. My entire video training libraries, audio cassettes, books, workbooks, and everything else. And always it's the entrepreneurs. Always it's the highest paid salespeople. Always it's the people who are making the most money. Now some people say, well, geez, you know, if I was making a lot of money, I'd buy that stuff too. I'm sorry. That's like saying, you know, if I could win a few marathons, I'd train. Or if I could get some heat out of that fire, I'd put some wood on it. No, there's a chicken and egg here. The chicken comes before the egg. Cause and effect. The cause comes before the effect. If you want to be paid highly, you have to invest an enormous amount in becoming really, really good at what you do. And then you'll be able to afford to invest even more in what you do at getting even better. You see, if you were to compare yourself, and I sometimes say to my audiences, how many people here would like to earn $50,000 for a job or $250,000 for the same job? And you can guess, everybody raises their hand, they'd like to make $250,000. I say, well, that's good. And you should make $250,000. Now, here's my first question. The person earning $250,000, and there are people in this room who earn $50,000, and people in this room who earn $250,000, and they're selling pretty much the same product out of the same office, under the same conditions, to the same people at the same prices, with the same competition, okay? But one's making $250,000, one's making $50,000. And sometimes they have the same number of years of experience. Sometimes the person making $250,000 doesn't even have the same education or opportunities as the person making $50,000. But here's my question. Is the person making $250,000 10 times better than the person making $50,000? The person will say, well, no, it could possibly be 10 times better. No, you're right. It's physically, mentally impossible for a person to have an IQ that's more than a few percentage points greater than everybody else's. Normal IQ is 100. College-level IQ is 115 to 120. Exceptional is 130. Genius is 140. In other words, not a big difference. And your IQ is amenable to hard work. The more you use your mind, actually, the smarter you get. So it's not possible for a person to be 10 times smarter. Is it possible that this person works 10 times the number of hours? No, the average person works, you know, 40 hours a week. Nobody can work 400 hours a week. Well, is this person seeing 10 times the number of prospects or customers? No, not possible to see 10 times. There's no way. The only way a person could be doing 10 times as much, earning 10 times as much, is if they're doing something far smarter and better than the others. So here's the rule. Is the person who is earning 5 times as much may not even be as smart as the person earning $50,000. So if you want to earn 5 times as much, 10 times as much, realize that there's not a whit of difference between yourself and the person who's earning vastly more than you. They've just figured out how to get there faster than you have. It'd be exactly the same as if I said, okay, I'll meet you two guys at this place downtown. And the one guy heads off for the place downtown, but he doesn't have the address and he doesn't have a map and he's new to town. And I hold the other person back and I say, look, here's something from MapQuest. I pulled it down off the computer. Here's the exact route. Here's the address. Here's the shortest way to get there. You follow this, I'll meet you there. We'll beat that other guy by a mile. The person who's got the proper map is going to get there 5-10 times faster than the person who's driving around hoping they come across it. So that's my first point. Now, with regard to earning 5 or 10 times as much, remember this. The person who's earning 10 times as much today was at one time earning 1/10 as much. Everybody who is earning $250,000 today was at one time earning $25,000 or $50,000. And what they did was certain things in a certain way to get to the point where they're making this amount of money. And the fact is that if they have done it, if hundreds of thousands of other people have done it, then you can do it as well, because nobody's better than you and nobody's smarter than you. One of the most important changes that takes place in your thinking is to realize that I can do anything that anybody else can do. If that person can become a millionaire, so can I. If that person can earn 5 or 10 times as much as me, so can I. I can do what other people can do. And once you realize that, your whole life begins to change. And then the only question you ask is how? How do I do it? How do I learn it? I'll give you a very simple success secret. And I encourage people to ask me as well, is go to the most successful person you know and ask for their advice. And they'll give it to you. And then take it. And just take it over and over again. I've had people come to me and they say, Could you tell me how I can be successful? I say, yes, first of all, read this book. Once you've read the book, if you have any questions, come back to me, and I'll talk to you. And they look at me, and they have this blank look, and they say, okay. And I never see or hear from them again. Why is that? It's because they're not willing to work. They're just not willing to do the work. And then other people, I'll say, listen to this audio program. You know, read this book and try this out. And they'll come back in 60, 90 days. They say, I did it. I did that. I followed the instructions and everything else, and it's working great. And what should I do now? I say, good. Now, step two is do this and do this. And then they try that, and they come back. And I say, step three is this. And the wonderful thing is that if you go to successful people and ask for their advice, they'll give you advice. And if you take the advice, you'll get the results. And if you get the results and go back, they'll help you some more. And sometimes your whole life will be changed by the fact that somebody recognizes that spending time on you is a valuable use of time, whereas spending time on someone else is just a waste of time because they won't do the work. And the more you learn what other people have learned, the more you change your thinking and change your life. The more you internalize their ideas and you read the things that they read and you listen to the things that they listen to. I can't tell you the number of people who have come up to me and they said, you know, my boss, my wife, my husband got me into this, and I didn't think it was any good, and a waste of time, and I started listening, and I started reading, and said, now my life is totally different. Now I give this stuff to everybody, and everybody who follows my advice doubles and triples their sales and their income. So we get ahead in life by, first of all, helping ourselves, and then helping others, who then help others, and then help others. Well, one of the most important things you do, now you've decided, you've got dream big dreams, you're going to live a long life, you're going to be very happy, you're going to be at the top of your field, you're going to earn 5 or 10 times as much as the average person. You're going to hold on to most of it. You're going to put it into your financial fortress account. You're going to become financially independent. You're going to become wealthy and live a long life. Well, now, what are some of the other things that we have to do in order to change our thinking? And one of them that's most important is you have to take complete responsibility. What we have found over and over again is that successful people are those who accept complete responsibility for their lives with no excuses and no blaming. They finally say, I am responsible. I am responsible. I like myself, and I am responsible. And instead of making excuses, they channel all their energy into making progress. They commit to excellence. They say, by gum, if someone else can get into the top 10% in my field, I can do it as well. And they set excellence as their goal, and they think about excellence most of the time. And they keep asking themselves, what one skill, if I were to be absolutely excellent at it, would help me the most right now? And even if they're not good at it or they're not comfortable with it, they identify the skill and they write it down and they make a plan and they work on it every day. Another thing that really successful people do is they put people first. They realize that the people in your life are the most important part of your life. And that, as Benjamin Disraeli once said, no success in public life can compensate for failure in the home. If you create a wonderful life with your spouse, with your children, with your friends, so that you're surrounded by people that you like and love and enjoy and trust and respect, and they like and love and trust and enjoy and respect you, then you are a very rich person. And the wonderful thing is that everything you do that enables you to achieve greater success on the outside enables you to achieve greater success in your relationships. You feel better. You like yourself more. You like other people more. You respect yourself more. You respect them more, and so on. So finally, in changing your thinking and changing your life, remember that you are a genius, that your mind is so incredible that you can solve any problem that's ever sent your way, that you can overcome any obstacle, that you can achieve any goal, that you can do anything you put your mind to, that you have enough of talent and natural ability within your own mind that you can overcome any difficulty that stands between you and anything that you want to accomplish in life. So for now and for the rest of your life, realize the most important thing that you can do is change your thinking. And the biggest enemy you'll always have is yourself. Your biggest enemies will always be your own doubts and fears. And you overcome your doubts and fears in a very simple way. You decide exactly what you want. You write it down. You make a plan. You work on it every single day. And you resolve in advance that you'll never give up. And if you do that and you keep doing that day after day, you will transform yourself completely. You will become an extraordinary person. You have such high self-esteem and self-confidence that you will become like a force of nature, like a flash flood in the spring. You will become virtually unstoppable in everything you do. And I hope you do.
Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined, continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.